Hello again, I'm Mike Morin, and you found Reset, 40 is the New Happy. Now, this is a podcast that celebrates finding happiness in what we do to put bread on the table. It's all about life's second acts. But in the case of Greg Bogus, his is more than a two-act play. Most of the people that you meet here come from long-established careers, solo careers or single careers, to find their next path. Greg has done a little bit of this and a bit of that, but in the end, his final curtain call will be that of a stand-up comic and actor, which is what he does today. So, Greg, did you really at one time drive strippers to their jobs?
I knew I had to put that in there. And yes, I did. You would think that that's something that I made up. But no, that was one of the things that I ended up doing. I ended up bumping into a couple, and they ran an entertainment agency. Come to find out the entertainment was a little a little unconventional.
They don't have driver's licenses? I mean,
well, yeah. So you'd always don't want to send an attractive woman into a tough situation. So you want to have kind of a guy that looks like he might be able to, you know, either knock someone in the chops or drive a car out real quick if things get dicey. So that's one of the jobs I fell into.
All right, so one of many. Now, I met you 15 years ago when you were the auditor at Howard Johnson's in Nashville, which, of course, isn't there any longer. Where was your comedy career at that point in 2000?
Well, so I'd been doing it for about 6 years around that time, and so I was starting to get my sea legs under me. The first few years, you're an open micer. You kind of don't really know anything about the business. You're always afraid that any moment you're going to get thrown out of the business. And it's a weird business in the sense that you kind of never get thrown out. There's people that have been around for 30 years that are still open micers, but they're still considered comics. So once you start doing it, you become a member of the club. So I just was starting to get my sea legs under me, was probably starting to do some middle spots, and was just starting to get into acting. Around that time. So that was kind of where my acting career started to take off a little bit.
All right, so your life has been extremely rich with a lot of different experiences. Seems like the perfect setup for a career in comedy.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's interesting about comedy is that people tend to like hearing about unique stories and unique things. And when you can tap into your own life, it's much more interesting than the usual airplane food and McDonald's and, you know, how about those Red Sox? You know, the typical things that a lot of comics, you know, tend to overuse. So when you can talk about personal experiences, I'm the youngest of six kids, so I grew up in a big family, and sometimes tap into that. When you can personalize it, it's your own stuff, and it also makes it tougher for somebody to creatively clip or lift your material, because when you're talking about something in your own life, someone's going to have to try to adapt that, and it's not going to work out as well for them.
All right, so you've been a tour guide at a pirate museum, and with Halloween is coming, I understand that you're an actor at local haunted Halloween attractions, too.
Yeah, I found that some years ago. I mean, I was a kid. I used to walk up to the Liamo store and buy Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine. So along with liking comedy and laughter, I also liked horror and grew up watching Universal horror movies and things like that. And then I saw an ad for one of the local big haunted attractions. I want to say it was 5 or 6 years ago. And went down and auditioned, and lo and behold, I was a vampire for a Halloween season. So that was kind of fun, and I realized that stand-up comedy and haunting are very similar in that they're both the end result is an uncontrollable reaction from the people that you're performing for. Stand-up comedy, it's the uncontrollable act of laughter. And haunting, it's the uncontrollable act of screaming or running into a wall. Or
or for your customer, incontinence.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so did loved ones encourage your dream of being on stage as you went from job to job? I mean, let's be honest, not a conventional life on your part.
No, I have all the thanks in the world to all the members of my family, my folks who always encouraged me to chase my dreams, and my brothers and sisters. I've got, four brothers and a sister, and they've all been a great help to me in one way or another, whether it was giving me an odd painting job when they needed it, or helping them to stack some wood for a few bucks, or offering me some not necessarily great jokes. But yeah, my family was really instrumental. In the early years, there used to be comedy competitions at the High Five in Manchester, if you remember the High Five. And so they used to do once a year, I think it was a 3 or 4 week comedy competition. And so, one of the things was always good was to bring your family. So I had quite a few family members to tap into. And back then, my dear Nana was still alive and she came to see me, but fortunately her hearing wasn't so good. So she wasn't able to hear what I was saying, which was probably for the better.
All right, so after a day of house painting, some of the things you just told us, stone wall building, you then would clean up and go to a club or a movie set. That would be a typical day probably for you in some cases.
Yeah, that was a typical day, driving, working at the Pirate Museum. And one part of the job was to be a tour guide, and the other part was putting on this smock and this scary mask and sitting in a chair, and you'd be in front of this treasure chest, and there'd be a plaque on the wall behind it. So the parents would come up and would read the plaque, and the kids would lose their attention and would start playing with the stuff in the treasure chest. You'd move, scare the dickens out of the kid who screams, and would start telling your parents that the guy moved, and the parents, would poo-poo the kid, then they'd turn around and they'd scare the parent too. So then you'd rush from there, which was in Salem, Mass, which was always the worst place to get to in the morning and the worst place to leave during a rush hour. And then, sometimes go to Bangor or Caribou, Maine, or Burlington, Vermont, or Providence, Rhode Island, or Brockton, or Springfield. So it was, a lot of traveling. There's not as many as the far-flung gigs that I've been doing lately. A lot of the stuff has been a little bit more closer to home. But still, every once in a while, I do the Pittsburgh and the, South Carolinas and what have you. So it's been a challenge, but it's been great.
All right, so talk about the frustration of building a career in the arts and getting the validation that performers always seek.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that's interesting is being a performer is that there is this immediate, especially in stand-up comedy, it's an immediate feedback loop. So you do something and you immediately know whether the joke's good or not because the crowd either laughs or they don't laugh. So when I started to do some of the other things, it was interesting because you wouldn't quite get that immediate feedback loop. When you're doing acting, you'd have to wait for this commercial to be produced and then, and then aired. And sometimes you'd say, hey, that's pretty great. And then other times you'd say, it's not exactly what I'd expected it was going to be. It's been a fun thing to try to continue on and show business stuff because, you get hot. And then all of a sudden the calls stop and you wonder what's going on. Then you just try to retool and redouble your efforts and try something different and try something new. And so always working on, whether it's, like I said, got my own TV show called The Bogus Hour. And that was with great encouragement from my comedian friend Tom Hayes, who said, you got to go out there and create your own stuff. You got to go out there and not expect a booking agent or a casting director or somebody to give you something. You got to make something of your own and make yourself, somebody that people will become attracted to.
So, clearly you've been doing this a long time. You love it. You never know how much money you're going to make. And I'm going to guess you don't really care if you become the next Seth Meyers or George Clooney.
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot to be said. There's a great comic named Mike Donovan who just published a book of his own, a history book. And he, one time was asked about somebody, by somebody saying, if you don't make it as, the next Seinfeld or George Carlin, what are you going to do? And he says, I enjoy doing comedy. I like performing stand-up comedy. That's enough for me to make a living doing that. And so for me, I do really like doing that, and I like being creative in other ways, with the TV and with the haunting and things like that. Performing is enough for me. And if the blind squirrel finds an acorn that has a few $100,000 in it, that'll be great. But if not, I'd be glad to keep on doing what I'm doing because it's fulfilling.
So what's been the biggest break in your performing career so far? Is there one moment you can point to that just kind of turned the corner for you, be it somebody that gave you a great break or a certain kind of exposure?
You know, probably that first commercial that I auditioned for an Office Products commercial back when I first started. I had a comedian buddy who had started working at a modeling agency in Manchester, and he encouraged me to go sign up. And this was kind of in the internet days, so you just go with a headshot and a bio and give it to them. And so I got cast to be the guy at the office party who photocopies his butt. And I have to say, it was good casting. And so I went for the audition, and the first audition that I went to for a television commercial acting job I got. And that was, to me, that was like, great. It can be done. And now that's steeled me for it's probably one in 20 times now where you go for an audition and you get something. But I realize that it's just a matter of repetition and of not getting discouraged and realizing that, just like doing a joke that doesn't work, it's acting or modeling or any of these other things, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and you just get back up on the horse again if they kick you off.
I dabbled a bit of that myself, Manchester agency, and right out of the box, I get a great gig for CVS. I'm a pharmacist.
Oh, nice.
And then the recession hit, and the jobs went away. Does that sound familiar?
It sure does. Yeah, the recession was really, really tough, and it just seems, at least for me, to be rebooting after that long, long dip. It was literally a chasm, and then it's been kind of a slow climb back out. And just this past year, this past summer was pretty. Pretty good for me. I did a healthcare commercial. I did a lottery commercial. I played a trucker in a truck stop ogling at the lead character for some German TV series. So that was kind of fun, hanging over a plate of eggs and bacon while leering at some German woman who I didn't know what the heck she was saying. Watching the sound guy, getting furious because people weren't quiet enough for him, so the sounds weren't right. He's screaming in German. So that was great. And then I've just, had some great episodes of my TV show that have come along. And then started to work with a couple of different websites and some magazines that looks like I may have in the offing. So it's been a good run lately.
There is no such thing as an overnight success, and you're not the only one that can claim that, really.
Yeah, I mean, and part of showbiz, I think, is also its attrition, and a lot of people do get frustrated if things don't, turn out for them in a matter of days. And, you look at some of the great singers and performers, Rodney Dangerfield, was in his, I think, 60s when he finally hit it, so I've still got another 11 years to go if I hold myself up to the Rodney Dangerfield standard.
All right, finally, since your life has really been a play of many acts, what do you hope to achieve before that final curtain call?
Well, I got to say, actually, meeting you, I was kind of inspired to see your book, and I guess I have a book in me. And so I think that one of these days I'm actually going to sit down and, put all my attention deficit disorder to rest and actually, pound out a book. Or two. Like I said, seeing my friend Mike Donovan write his book and knowing that he's, probably got another 20 books in him, that I at least have one book in me. So I know that that's something that I would like to do and have that as one of the feathers in my cap.
Yeah, it is fun to do, very satisfying. And let folks know where they can find you on TV or on the internet or YouTube for the Bogus Hour.
Yeah, so the Bogus Hour runs on Access Nashua, and I believe it's accessnashua.com, and they live stream it through the website there. But you can also just Google the Bogus Hour, THEBOGGIS Hour, and find it on YouTube, and there's 10 episodes, and there's more to come.
And I may find my way onto one of your episodes, true?
This is very true. There may be a Mike Morin episode in the offing.
Greg Bogus, comedian of many years with lots of left for him to do. Thanks. Good talking to you.
Mike, it was a pleasure to be with you, and hope to see you soon.